First thing I'd like to do is thank you, Brother David, for your singing, and I thank you for the hospitality, for letting me stay over for the afternoon and for the coffee. I certainly needed it for today. And I do appreciate the attention that everyone gave me this morning. I do appreciate the compliments. I've said it this morning, and I'm going to say it again. I always look forward to preaching here, and you've all been such a wonderful audience, and I thank you so much for that. About 30 years ago, there was a Truth Magazine article that was titled, "Can an Unmarried Woman Care About the Lord?" And it was written by a minister's daughter. She was, at the time, a single woman. She was 25 years old, which was a fairly uncommon sight in the church back then. And I was drawn to this article, being the age now that she was then, and that she brought some very essential points about being a single Christian that many have overlooked. And I want to make it clear, this sermon was not put together in revenge toward what some people have said about me. I want to make it clear that's not the case at all. I actually started this sermon, I started putting this together at the start of January of last year, and I didn't get around until December of last year of presenting it. So I spent a lot of time putting this together and talking to people about this. And I'm not here at trying to devalue marriage either. I'm not going to stand up here and try to cry foul at an institution that God has created. That'd be very foolish of me. I'm not going to do that. But I do want us to look at some points that are often overlooked in the church that are related to singleness. There are some stereotypes that are associated with being single that do need to be reconsidered in the church. And I'd encourage you to open your Bibles to 1 Corinthians chapter 7, beginning in verse 24. 1 Corinthians 7, verse 24. We read, "Brethren, let each one remain with God in the state in which he was called. Now concerning virgins, I have no commandment from the Lord, yet I give judgment as one whom the Lord in his mercy has made trustworthy. I suppose, therefore, that this is good because of the present distress, that it is good for a man to remain as he is. Are you bound to a wife? Do not seek to be loosed. Are you loosed from a wife? Do not seek a wife. But even if you do marry, you have not sinned, and if a virgin marries, she has not sinned. Nevertheless, such will have trouble in the flesh, but I would spare you. This I say, brethren, the time is short, so that from now on even those who have wives should be as though they had none. Those who weep, as though they did not weep. Those who rejoice, as though they did not rejoice. Those who buy, as though they did not possess. And those who use this world, as not misusing it. For the form of this world is passing away. But I want you to be without care. He who is unmarried cares for the things of the Lord, how he may please the Lord. But he who is married cares about the things of the world, how he may please his wife. There is a difference between a wife and a virgin. The unmarried woman cares about the things of the Lord, that she may be holy both in body and in spirit. But she who is married cares about the things of the world, how she may please her husband. And this I say for your own profit, not that I may put a leash on you, but for what is proper, and that you may serve the Lord without distraction. But if any man thinks he is behaving improperly toward his virgin, if she is past the flower of youth, and thus it must be, let him do what he wishes. He does not sin, let them marry. Nevertheless, he who stands steadfast in his heart, having no necessity, but has power over his own will, and has so determined in his heart that he will keep his virgin, does well. So then, he who gives her in marriage does well, but he who does not give her in marriage does better. A wife is bound by law as long as her husband lives. But if her husband dies, she is at liberty to be married to whom she wishes, only in the Lord. But she is happier if she remains as she is, according to my judgment. And I think I also have the Spirit of God." Now, it should be pointed out what Paul is not saying. Paul is not saying that, you know, the married are obviously more worldly. No, Paul was never out to try to make, you know, an elite club of Christians in the church. That wasn't his intention. Paul was certainly not against marriage. He's not saying that the married are obviously more worldly, that only the best Christians are single. That's not what he was saying. What Paul is saying is that there are benefits of being married, but perhaps more if single. One does not sin by marrying. That's assuming, of course, there's scriptural authority that's involved. But one might be better off single. We're ultimately told to be content no matter what state that we are called to. Now, as to why one is not married could be for several reasons. First is that one has no desire to be married. And there are people like that. And God has made it clear in His scriptures that marriage needs to be taken pretty seriously. And if such is the case for one that doesn't really have much of a desire to be married, there would certainly be nothing wrong in staying single. There are singles in the church who cannot find someone to marry. And this might seem kind of odd at first. You know, well, there's plenty of fish in the sea. What do you mean you can't find someone to marry? We're going to cover that in a few moments, but that is a potential situation. Third, there are those who are not a scriptural candidate for marriage. When I was in 2009, when I went to the Ellettsville preaching program, we had a man there, really interesting guy. I would say he was in his late 40s, and I would say the first maybe 35 years of his life were involved doing every worldly thing possible, whether it was, you know, drug abuse, jail time, multiple wives. We could go on, you name it. He probably did it, and it was so interesting to meet this man. And when asked if he could potentially be a potential candidate for marriage, just out of safety concerns for his own soul, he decided that he was not a scriptural candidate for marriage. But he's been very active in the church. I know he's been preaching a lot of gospel meetings out west, and I was certainly encouraged by his presence at the program. So we do have those that are not a scriptural candidate for marriage, but can certainly be of use for the Lord. And then we have those who are widowed. Romans chapter 7, verses 2 through 3. For the woman who has a husband is bound by the law to her husband as long as he lives. But if the husband dies, she is released from the law of her husband. So then if, while her husband lives, she marries another man, she will be called an adulteress. But if her husband dies, she is free from that law, so that she is no adulteress, though she has married another man. There are benefits of being single, as we talked about in 1 Corinthians 7. The singles, generally speaking, have more undistracted time and energy that can be used for work and to grow in the Lord. But there are some challenges that face our singles, too, challenges that I don't think many of us really notice, and I do want us to look at that. The first thing to point out in regarding young singles is the challenge to remain sexually pure. And in this age, it's more difficult to do so than in previous generations. And I would argue that it's always been a challenge. But with this day and age, the age of adolescence and the age of a first marriage, there's now a larger gap between that than ever before. It's been reported that girls generally enter puberty at ages 10 or 11, and for boys it's 11 and 12. But for the age of a first marriage, that has dramatically risen. In 1970, the average age for a first marriage for a woman was 20. For a man, it was 23. Contrast that to 2016, which the age is now 26 for a woman and 28 for a man. So there is a wider gap between adolescence and marriage than ever before. And, you know, those of you who are older, you can reflect back on your childhood. I'm sure you faced some challenges. And the standards of God don't change. But it is harder for young people to stay pure in this day and age. You know, to sum up what I'm trying to say, throughout most of the 20th century, it wasn't unreasonable to expect to marry within 5 years after you left school. You know, true love waited, but not like it has to today. You know, and today's love has to contend with a culture that is becoming more and more sexually immoral. And, you know, I'm not trying to make any justification or excuses, but that can be a challenge for young singles at times. This next point also applies to young singles as too, because I have unfortunately met some young people who happen to be widowed. But for older singles who are widowed, this is starting to become more of a common issue. You know, it's not pleasant to think about, but if God allows enough time on earth to go, one in a marriage is eventually going to pass away. My grandma, for example, in the summer of 1996, we buried Grandpa John after his battle with lung cancer. Last summer, 20 years later, her second husband passed away. Same cancer. My grandma is 72 years old, I think, and she has already buried two husbands. You know, people are living longer than usual on average, because, thanks to our advanced health care. And yet, while we haven't been able to really stop our unexpected accidents, we still have illnesses that can suddenly happen. So what's becoming more and more common is that widows may now live decades longer than their deceased spouses. And that is a challenge for those widowed. This next point, I think, is perhaps most overlooked. There can, in fact, be a unique grief with being single. Now, I believe that singles can still live a very fulfilling and happy life. But there can be a unique grief with never having a spouse or never having children. You know, it might seem kind of strange, but, you know, it's easy to say to somebody, well, you've never been married, you've never had children. You don't know how difficult it is, and I am sure it's difficult. I'm not going to stand up here and deny it. But, you know, there are some people, they've never had that joy of being a spouse or never being a parent. There can be a unique grief associated with this. Now, I remember at a few birthdays of mine and most Christmases growing up, my aunt was always so interested in seeing my reaction as I opened a gift. And, I mean, she would literally stop. She would try to stop everybody just so she could focus better on me and my sister as we would open our gifts. And I always wondered why that was. But then I started to understand that more as I got older, because she didn't have any children. You know, watching a child with their surprised look as they opened up a gift, she didn't really get to experience that a whole lot. And because of her circumstances, it was a good choice for her to not have children. And there are plenty of people in the world who don't have children. And that doesn't make them bad people. That doesn't make them selfish at all. The fact is, there are hardships involved for being singles and for being married as well. The difference, I think, is our attitude of how we look at these hardships. You may remember Coach Woody Hayes. If you're not very familiar with him, he was a head football coach at Ohio State. He won several championships for the university. He was a really good coach, but he was also, to sum it up, a character, you know. And at parties, his wife would be asked, "How do you live with this man?" You know, and she said, "Look, I would never divorce Woody, but there are a couple times I wanted to kill him." You know, and the fact is, there are some hardships involved with being married, but but this is a hardship for singles of sometimes, you know, of the grief that can be associated with not having a spouse or never having children. You know, and we would never, for really good marriages, and every good marriage has hardships, you know, we wouldn't look at these hardships and define a whole marriage based on that. But it seems like we don't have that same attitude when it comes to singles who haven't had that. You know, we might be tempted to say, "Your experience in this kind of grief, maybe you should have gotten married. Maybe you should have had children." You know, is that really, should that be our perspective? The fact is, there's hardships for everyone involved in life. How about the fact that we live in a world that's kind of geared toward couples? Whenever I go out to eat, you know, I like to go out to eat every so often, and I do this a lot by myself. I've gotten that funny look from people, like, "You're eating by yourself?" I've gotten that look from people. And there are times, I admit, you know, I'm eating and I'm facing an empty booth, and I'll think, well, I wonder, you know. And I've spoken to a lot of other singles about this. I know they experience something similar. What's interesting is that in other cultures, restaurants are not based off that way. In some Asian countries, for example, you go in and the seat where you're seated at is made purposely to be private, so you can enjoy, you know, your own food. You know, it's more geared toward the enjoyment of food as opposed to socialization. That's just one example. You know, if you think about it, restaurants, hotels, taxes, fellowship activities, they tend to be geared toward couples. And with as many couples as we do have, although it is starting to decline, You can imagine this is hard for singles. And while our culture tends to favor couples, unfortunately, this tends to be true in the church as well. And I do actually want to cover the subject of matchmaking. Now, I want to be clear on something. Matchmaking isn't always offensive. I know some married couples that were set up because of matchmaking attempts, and I would hope they don't regret that. Some singles do appreciate it, and I think these attempts are always done with good intentions. But there are some attempts that cross the line. Some attempts I've dealt with involve brethren saying some rather hurtful things. A personal favorite of mine is, well, you're not looking hard enough. You're not trying hard enough. I'm not the only single in the church that this has been said to. And I'm here to tell you, we go to gospel meetings. We go to lectures. We go to get-togethers. We find more couples, but not necessarily singles that we'd want to date. And I had a classmate in high school that said, Rob, I'm going to get you wasted by the end of this year. He didn't. But, you know, he was so determined to do that. It seems like that's a little true in the church as well. I'll get you a girl by the end of this year. Oh, I will. I've heard that. It's interesting how people look at this as some status that needs to be fixed. In 1 Corinthians chapter 7, beginning in verse 13, we read, but to the rest, not I, the Lord, say, if any brother has a wife who does not believe, and she is willing to live with him, let him not divorce her. And a woman who has a husband who does not believe, if he is willing to live with her, let her not divorce him. For the unbelieving husband is sanctified by the wife, and the unbelieving wife is sanctified by the husband. Otherwise your children would be unclean, but now they are holy. But if the unbeliever departs, let him depart. A brother or a sister is not under bondage in such cases. God has called us to peace. For how do you know, O wife, whether you will save your husband? Or how do you know, O husband, whether you will save your wife? I've always found this passage really interesting in the fact that, you know, why is it that God did not say that a Christian must be married to a Christian? Why did he not say that? You know, now he's not, in this passage, Paul's not promoting marriage to non-Christians, and God has warned of the dangers of marriage to non-Christians, but he does permit it. And I think this is because of the simple fact that availability is not the same thing as compatibility. There is a difference there. Just because two people are Christians, that doesn't automatically make them compatible. It doesn't matter if they're both Christians. It doesn't matter if they both happen to be the same age. That doesn't automatically make them compatible. And I've had brethren that have criticized me for not pursuing women that I can't even hold a one-minute conversation with. And I do try on the conversation, by the way. You know, and if I can't even do that, what would make you think I could be married to one until one of us dies? The fact is, that's not being too picky. Because when I read the scriptures, I read that God takes marriage pretty seriously. In Matthew chapter 19, verse 8, we read, he said to them, Moses, because of the hardness of your hearts, permitted you to divorce your wives. But from the beginning it was not so. And I say to you that whoever divorces his wife, except for sexual immorality, and marries another, commits adultery. And whoever marries her who is divorced commits adultery. His disciples said to him, if such is the case of the man with his wife, it is better not to marry. I know that as an individual, I can't offer perfection. And I know that if I do marry, I won't marry a perfect mate. But I need to take marriage pretty seriously. There's no reason for me to settle for someone who I'm just really not all that interested in. You see, a challenge for singles is that they do kind of feel left out in the church because couples, generally speaking, tend to hang around couples. And because we have so many of us in the church who are married with children, look, I realize that families take up a lot of our time and should, But what I've often found is that many don't know how to communicate with singles. You know, the easy conversation starter, hey, how's your kids doing? It's, you know, that's kind of absent. And then it can be easy to ostracize these people. It seems like some make assumptions about singles that only heighten the tension between such people in the church. You know, they're lazy, they're irresponsible. You know, they hate children. They might be homosexual. You know, there's all sorts of things that are said about singles. And what's interesting is that I've known married people that fell under these very terms that I've heard people describe singles for. You know, it does say in the Bible that it is not good for man to be alone. But the irony of quoting that to singles is that many singles are feeling left out by congregations. We read in Matthew chapter 12, verses 48, but he answered and said to the one who told him, who is my mother and who are my brothers? And he stretched out his hand toward his disciples and said, here are my mother and my brothers, for whoever does the will of my Father in heaven is my brother and sister and mother. So singles do belong in the Lord's family. There is work for them to do. You know, I may not carry the responsibilities of being married and being a parent. I don't carry those responsibilities, but, you know, don't think that because I don't carry that means I'm just, you know, a free spirit without, you know, any worry or care in the world. That's not true. You know, I'm not free from all work. The fact is, I have a soul just the same as all married people. I'm going to stand before God on Judgment Day, and if I haven't met up with the responsibilities in order to get eternal life, I'm gonna miss out on that. You know, I don't want to be doing that. None of us want to do that. In John chapter 15, verses 12 through 14, we read, this is my commandment, that you love one another as I have loved you. Greater love has no one than this, than to lay down one's life for his friends. You are my friends if you do whatever I command you. You know, as singles, we are not excluded from the commandments that God gives to his children. You know, I don't know what it's like to have the kind of love and patience, you know, for a wife and children, but that doesn't mean I can't have any love and patience for my spiritual family. You know, God would not give commands to people when he knows they can't do it. You know, he doesn't do that. You know, I think about some of you that have been here long enough may remember them, Stuart and Pearl Conley. They were a married couple, but they didn't have any children. But, you know, I can personally say that they really did treat me like family. You know, they treated me as if I was their grandson, and I miss them. You know, I feel like they were taken, you know, from life too early. But, you know, when you've lived a life like that in service to your brethren, you can safely say that person truly loved the Lord. They truly cared for their spiritual family. You know, and that's an encouraging thing. And singles are certainly capable of sending cards and preparing food for those in need. They can certainly encourage those that are weak in the faith. They can spread the gospel to those who are lost in the world. They can still practice hospitality, and we could go on that. But in Colossians chapter 3, verses 12 through 15, we read, therefore, as the elect of God, holy and beloved, put on tender mercies, kindness, humility, meekness, long-suffering, bearing with one another and forgiving one another. If anyone has any complaint against another, even as Christ forgave you, so you must do. But above all these things, put on love, which is the bond of perfection. And let the peace of God rule in your hearts, to which you were also called in one body, and be thankful. This doesn't apply to just, you know, parents and those married. This applies to everyone in the church. Now, there are certainly those who, you know, they pretend like they're serving God. You know, they put on a mask. They act like, you know, they try to act like they're such wonderful people. And there are people like that out there. But there are also many in the church who are really trying to do what they can for them and for their spiritual family. Now, it's true that single men can't serve as elders or deacons, but we certainly wouldn't go as far as saying that means they're excluded from all work. No, certainly not. It should be pointed out, though, that singles have more work than those married may realize. There's a lot of singles that are living on one income. But in addition to that, the singles tend to be responsible for the home as well. You know, for those widowed and divorced, they have to relearn how to do things that was once covered by the spouse. That's a challenging thing to do sometimes. And singles can do a lot for the Lord. You know, I don't want to minimize that fact, but the fact is, we do have limits. You know, we're not machines that can just be constantly running 24/7. None of us are like that. But speaking of limits, being a Christian does not mean, you know, that we are above temptation, as I talked about this morning. You know, just because we're Christians, we're not free from temptation. We're not free from the problems in this world. You know, and for all the scriptures that we read about the good things about marriage, there are several marriages that were not so. You know, Ahab had Jezebel. Hosea had Gomer. Abigail had Nabal. Leah had Jacob. You know, Christians sometimes fall into bad marriages. In addition, a happy marriage can end in an unexpected death. You know, even in our age of advanced health care, it still happens. The fact is, nothing in life is guaranteed, and marriage is no exception to that. But you know, marriage is not required from the scriptures. I don't read any passage that indicates that. The fact is, marriage and children is not the only way to happiness. You know, and I've heard those questions. Well, who's going to take care of you when you're old? Do you really want to die alone? Look, how do I know that if I do marry someday, that my spouse won't die first? You know, that my children won't move away from me when they grow up? How do I know that I'm going to die an expected death? I don't know how I'm going to die. None of us do. We can't predict the future. The fact is, marriage and family is not going to guarantee how I die. And when you think about it, it really doesn't matter how I pass away as long as I'm in the Lord's kingdom. As long as I'm in the Lord's kingdom, it doesn't matter. Speaking of the Lord's kingdom, it should be pointed out that there won't be marriage in heaven. Now, again, I'm not going to minimize the importance of the bond of marriage, but the fact is, it's honorable, but we must not make the mistake of valuing it above what it is. It's a flesh and blood relationship, and it's dissolved at death. We read in Matthew chapter 22, starting verse 29, Jesus answered and said to them, "You are mistaken, not knowing the scriptures nor the power of God. For in the resurrection they neither marry nor are given in marriage, but are like angels of God in heaven." You know, as many of you know, my grandfather on dad's side of the family passed away back in February. Had Grandpa lived one more month, he and Grandma would have been married for 68 years. That's a long time. But you know, when you compare it to eternity, it really is nothing. All Christians have to learn to be content with whatever state that we're in, because this life is not our destination. This life is a journey. And our state could change at any time, for better or for worse. I know we've covered a rather intriguing topic in the church, and I do thank you for your attention. There are a few more points that I do want to bring up. One of the most commonly talked about issues in today is the issue of helicopter parenting. How did this all start? Well, it started when missing children's photos began going being placed on milk cartons. Then this was followed by a documentary called A Nation at Risk. Then 9/11 further instilled the idea that our world was not safe. Then phones, as most of you know, became capable of doing a lot of things. Phones became capable of tracking for parents that wanted to know where their children were 24/7. And I don't think any of this came from bad intentions. The problem is that it led to the crisis we hear about today because we got so focused on certain aspects of childhood that we completely overlooked other factors. And the problem is that we're kind of making the same mistake in the church today. You know, the family is under attack, and I am not going to deny it. It's under attack. But the fact is, singles are being left out of the picture. I've been going to a lot of gospel meetings in the last few years, and I couldn't help but notice how three of those meetings were focused solely on the family. How many sermons have I heard that covered the subject of singleness? One. In my lifetime. It was actually from Brother Heath Rogers, who preached this sermon here. Celibacy. Some people would react to that term as if I had just said a curse word. It's almost never looked as a good thing among Christians, it seems. Some don't think such a life is even possible. Some don't think that such a life has benefits to it. It seems as if we acknowledge 1 Corinthians 7. But I really wonder how many of us would encourage others to live such a life. I know this is not for everybody. My issue that I have is that too many preachers encourage everyone to get married. And on that note, Christy, I'm not talking about your husband in any way. But I have heard this, and to sum up what a lot of them have indirectly said, what they'll do, they'll quote 1 Corinthians verses 7 through 9. We'll go ahead and read that. I say to the unmarried and to the widows, it is good for them if they remain even as I am. But if they cannot exercise self-control, let them marry. For it is better to marry than to burn with passion. So young people, you know, are you having any kind of desires? Well, you probably can't control them, so you probably should get married. Okay, they don't say that word for word, but that seems to be the direction that they seem to be going in. The problem I have with this is that when we are indirectly teaching our young people that they can't control their desires and that, you know, that marriage is somehow some magic bullet to remove all temptation, we're setting them up for failure. But marriage needs to be gone in for many more reasons than just that. And as opposed to encouraging everyone to get married, and we should preach on marriage, but we also need to teach on self-discipline and control, because ultimately, that's what all sin comes down to, a lack of self-control. What I once believed and have now refused to believe is that my life would not be complete until I found that one to marry. And what's interesting is that many people still have that perspective, even in the church. The fact is, the only thing that completes us is Christ. Reading Colossians chapter 2, verse 10, you are complete in Him, who is the head of all principality and power. And because some of us are so family-centered, again, I'm not saying family shouldn't take priority, but because we're so centered, we're kind of blind to the fact that we have so many in the Dayton area that are single, and we don't even realize it. 50% of our nation is now single. 50%. That fact should get our attention, and it's not because it's a threat to America's future population, because it's not, you know, but what should bother us is the fact that we have so many lost spiritually. And I do wonder how many of us would open up to our single neighbors. And nuclear families are great to have in the church. They really are. But the Lord needs his singles as well. The only thing in life that completes you is Christ. You know, nothing else on this earth can complete you. Only Christ can do that. And if you're here and you realize you've not committed yourself to Christ by his obedience to his plan of salvation, I'm here to tell you that nothing in this world can truly complete you, not until you've obeyed God's plan of salvation. If you're here today and you once obeyed, and you once were a Christian, and you've fallen away, again, you know, nothing in this world is worth more value than your soul. And if there's any way that we can help you, let us help you and let God help you in whatever way we can. If you're subject to the invitation, won't you come forward as together we stand and sing.